in any marketplace business, like the real smart moves are the ones that engage the marketplace to make that kind of like set off that wheel for you, so you're not just like pushing a boulder up a hill.
Why do some companies succeed in driving growth while others fail? How do some individuals advance in their careers to lead teams that change industries? In the age of mobile, these are the stories of the companies shaping the way we interact with our world and the people who drive their growth. Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to introduce today our next guest, Catherine Kelly. Catherine is currently the VP of Higher Education and Student Marketing at Handshake, a community platform of students and young alumni around the world to help connect recent grads with over 650,000 employers. Catherine started her career working in higher education and moved over to tech in 2014. Previously, she was an associate producer at ESPN, an instructor of design history, and a research assistant at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London and the Harry Ransom Center in Austin, Texas. She was also the editor, writer, and host of her very own web series, Just the Tips. Catherine, what an amazing background. So glad you could join us. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be talking to you today. Nice to meet you.
Great meeting you as well. Let's start with Handshake. Tell us a bit about the app, what you guys do, and what's your role?
Yeah. Okay. So Handshake is an application for college students and universities and companies that recruit early talent. And we are the number one place where college students find their first career building job out of college. At Handshake, I'm the vice president of higher education marketing, and it pleases me to be on your podcast because I'm not a marketer by training, as you pointed out. And so I'm like, well, certainly, what do marketers have to say? Like, I should listen to this podcast and find out more. But anyway, now I'm talking on it, so that's fine. But yes, what is my role? So right now, we partner with over 1,400 universities based in the US and the UK. So that is a tremendous market share for any ed tech company. Handshake doesn't consider itself ed tech, but like for companies that work with institutions, that's a really high volume of the number of universities that are in the US. That includes 4-year and 2-year universities. And so the work that I do at this point, because we have so much market share, is really more around thought leadership, product marketing, communication, positioning, because it's less about who is Handshake to that audience. It's more about, now that you use Handshake, why do you want to keep using Handshake? Why do you trust Handshake? Why are you helping deliver Handshake to your millions of students? We're a three-sided network. So by that, I mean, you know, usually the career network we've all heard of is LinkedIn, and that's a bunch of employers and a bunch of individuals who are coming to find jobs. And we kind of understand that dynamic. What's really different and special about Handshake is we work through this very trusted historic channel of higher education, and we are able to reach millions of students because of that. So it's a three-sided network, and all three users have to get something from our product to really use it to its fullest and then help kick off the flywheel of that marketplace dynamic.
Wow, that's really cool. And by the way, I also don't have a marketing background, and I started marketing when I started Branch in 2014. So
yeah, same, 2014. Great. So same. That's the year that this crew started marketing.
2014 is the year. But it's been a while since 2014. I feel like.
Okay, that's fine. We've been doing it for a while. I just like, so, you know, you get a little imposter syndrome. So you're like,
I have it all the time.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, I think a lot of experiences before, you know, kind of like really fit into, they probably make you a better marketer. So I think we'll go into that a little bit later. But, you know, I think what's really interesting, you joined Handshake right as the world entered the COVID pandemic. Can you talk about, you know, the experience, what got you excited about the company? How did you and your team course correct during that time?
That's right. I started in January of 2020. Surprise. And I was remote then. So there's sort of like two experiences that we've all had, especially in technology, working through the pandemic. One is yourself as an employee in your own experience. And then another is how your business has adapted to it for their users. So you kind of sit on both sides of that. So I was a remote employee always. The company's based in San Francisco. I'm in Southern California. And so for me, I was like, COVID is a big deal, but like this whole like working on Zoom thing's no big deal. So I actually kind of felt like I had a little bit of everyone was having these moments of like, what, like, how do we communicate? Like, what am I? Like, oh my God. Okay. This is fine. You guys were going to be fine. That aside, Handshake itself ended up actually doing really well because it was able to pivot really quickly during the pandemic and meet a new brand new need for its audience. So I'll kind of get into it a little bit more. Like, basically, like I said, in this three-sided marketplace, a big part of the dynamic is setting up. Let me give you the before and after. Before Handshake, the way that college recruiting happened, and I think you went to Stanford, right? So I went to Berkeley, and colleges like ours had a career center, and that career center would have
all the jobs.
All the jobs, and they would build relationships.
That's how I got my first job.
Oh, really? Oh, good for you. I was
through the career center.
Good job. I did not have the wherewithal. I was like, what? Like, I wouldn't have even known I was a real dummy. But anyway, but schools like that, those are like top tier universities, and like great companies know those schools and have this core school strategy, and they would go to the same 10 to 20 schools, and you'd fly your university recruiting team out, and they would go to a career fair, and the school would maintain the relationships, and they still do have a very robust employer relations program, but it was all managed in these individual pods. Okay, so the thing that Handshake did was it brought it all together as a network, and it's like, right, what if all the universities had all access to all of the employers, but more importantly, all the employers had access to all those students, which suddenly like really democratizes the students who are in hinterland. Our founder is like went to a hinterland school, like way Upper Peninsula, Michigan, and was like, huh, Google never comes to my campus. Like, surprise, they're not flying out there, right? So that kind of connectivity was already like in the DNA of the company, right? So then when COVID happened, obviously, sending employers to an on-campus event is like a super spreader event. So like, you can't do that. So that's like suddenly off the books. And a lot of the strategies for recruiting that were based on in-person interaction were out the door. And I mean, I'll skip to the punchline. I'll kind of tell you how we got there. Like, you end up being even more equitable in the process. Like many of us have seen, when you start to eliminate like the barrier of having to be in person, suddenly like you can meet a lot more people. A lot more people have access to the time needed to meet with recruiters. Like, it suddenly broke things open even more. And so one of the quick things that we were able to do at Handshake to make that real was create a free virtual fair, basically virtual career fair. That's the nomenclature that people are used to, but really you and I would think of it more as like a convened event by a trusted university where they bring together virtually hundreds of employers and thousands of students, and schools can band together and do it, which is really great for smaller schools that may not have gotten that love individually. And they can start to host these virtual events where you have big informational group sessions and 10-minute one-on-ones between employers and students. And because we were able to pivot and do that for that back-to-school season, so our world, we live in college world, so our world really starts in the fall. So between like COVID happening in March, so during January, COVID happened in March, we were able to kind of build an entire new product by the fall to launch it and facilitate close to 2 million interactions between students and employers. And that was a real sea change for the business because it really aligned not only did it like meet the need of where our users were, it harnessed the marketplace dynamics that were already like kind of chugging along. Like, it really took advantage, like everyone won. Like, this was in the school's interest to like get the students to go, and it was in the students' interest, and it was really good for saving money for employers. It also internally at the company, I think, helped in a period of great chaos and trauma for like the world. It helped us be like, we all have a single set of goals. We align on a single mission, and we could all really like rally to something. And I think that you don't say psychologically for a business, but like operationally for a business was very helpful for us to kind of like all rally around that. That was our COVID moment.
That's cool. And it seems like you guys, you know, did it and it worked really well. You know, how do you think about some of your growth strategies that worked really well? Stuff.
Yeah.
What were some of the strategies then? But also, what are, you know, how do you grow your user base today?
Yeah. Well, you know, and actually I should have said in that answer, going back to the equity piece, because it has to do with this growth strategy, and I'll kind of touch on that, is like one of the things that we learned that helped considerably was like And this now seems like old hat because we all are reading this in the news a lot, but like back to the equity piece, that is our mission as a company. And to think that like we were able to find out when we surveyed our users after all this remote engagement, we started to find out that not only are like geographically it's more equitable. So after the fact, we were able to find that, you know, not only was it like geographically more equitable and from a school perspective more equitable, because often issues of like race and class kind of sort out by school, with like community colleges being higher concentrations of students of color. And so when you start to like democratize like schools you're reaching, you're also kind of doing that across demographics as well. We would survey our audience and we found that, you know, Black students, Hispanic students, and women students were far more comfortable virtually than their white and male student peers interacting virtually. And some of the anecdotal data that we found would be, you know, like, yeah, like maybe you didn't feel comfortable pushing to the front of the line at the career fair. Maybe you didn't just feel comfortable kind of like asserting your skills in person. This gave you more time to prep. I think people, as we all found, like people who have a lot of home responsibilities or caretakers or who are not able to like adapt their schedule, like being able to plan in advance, like this is my 10-minute time to meet with this recruiter, kind of gives you that confidence and edge versus like this is the time the thing is happening. And if you don't fit in your schedule, it's just not going to happen. So that has given us the ability to reach a really large population of students. So that's kind of part of your question about like, how do you grow?
Yeah. But how do you actually reach them? Like,
yeah.
Is it ads? Is it referrals? Like,
yeah, no, that's a good point. The universities themselves have the ability to email students via our product. We set up a lot of nudges and notifications and like a lifecycle marketing once you're on Handshake to, hey, like this employer is reaching out to you. You have a message from this company. There's an event where this person is recruiting. Connecting it within the life at these life cycle moments around events and people and opportunities and jobs once they're already Handshake users. But in terms of acquiring the users, it is still primarily via the university network. Now, that said, we just hired a CMO. We're moving into kind of a new period of our marketing where we're thinking forward about, I mean, and this is a way bigger topic, but like about, you know, there, what is the future for Handshake speaking directly to consumers? And how do we establish our brand directly with consumers? And that is very complicated when you have been doing it one way for years and starting to break out and think about how you balance those and balance that against different stakeholders. Like, candidly, like, you know, what does the student think Handshake is? Is Handshake the thing your university gave you to use? Is Handshake the thing that you found on Instagram? Is Handshake the thing that you signed up for? Did you get it because of your school? I mean, and you mentioned you went to your career center. Like, that's a very powerful brand association. There's a lot of trust there. So we do not want to move away from that, but we have to figure out a way to be smart and add on to it so that we are able to establish ourselves kind of independently with consumers as well.
And how are you doing that? What are some things you're testing out?
Well, we're rebranding. So we're spending more time on our brand to get fresher and get cooler. We're investing quite a bit in social. I don't know if you knew this, but the kids are on TikTok. And so you got to be on the TikTok.
I am on TikTok.
You know,
I learned how to curl my hair on TikTok.
I learned how to do everything on TikTok. TikTok sets off so many like dopamine blasts in my brain. I love it and think there might not be anything as great as TikTok. But anyway, it's tough when you're in a consumer business. That's something we think about a lot is like, well, we aren't that, right? So like, but that's on their phone, college students' phone. So like, who are your brand peers and like, where are you appearing and how are you showing up there? But back to your question. So there is a big, the way that you found ways to curl your hair, Career Talk is a big thing, and like engaging with the influencers on Career Talk and becoming a part of that conversation. And then I think in the future, there's a lot more interesting things that we're starting to explore around SEO and around more advertising. But right now, I mean, truly millions of students every year are coming through our university. So they're really...
That's a big,
right? So this is like supplementing that. And then the last thing I'll say is like, in any marketplace business, like the real smart moves are the ones that engage the marketplace to make that kind of like set off that wheel for you. So you're not just like pushing a boulder up a hill. So like, what's really cool, like what would really get a student to come and like want to be on Handshake is the right employers are on Handshake. So you have to go like a step up, like your school that you trust is there, but like the good employers that there are there. And so one of the things that we look at closely is like, who are the types of students who are already succeeding really well? And how can we use that as a flywheel? So we find that business students and finance students and computer science students, tech students are doing really well. Those are the most popular jobs on our network. And so like, to what degree can we highlight the brands of the employers that are hiring? Because that will in turn entice the students to be involved. And so we kind of have to like use that to our advantage.
Very cool. Anything exciting coming up on your product launches that gets you excited over the next year or two?
Yeah, well, the most exciting work that we've got coming up, in addition to the rebrand, which I'm really excited about, is a couple things. We're doing a lot of work right now and investing in getting even more mobile, consumer-facing friendly. And that is the future, I think, of Handshake. It's really interesting. On a totally different kind of note, though, another thing I'm really interested in marketing-wise that's, frankly, probably more in my wheelhouse is... Last year, I started a group at Handshake called Handshake Network Trends, which was like our way of harnessing. We sit on quite a bit of data, and that is the coin of the realm when you're doing thought leadership and trying to get media mentions and trying to get press and building your brand. And so like, right, it's like coming up with, and especially now, I mean, like, look at like it's not a recession, but economic news. People are really interested in hearing about jobs and what's going on with jobs. And I think we are able to really own the like corner. We corner the market on what's happening with Gen Z applying to jobs right now. We are the place where the majority of college students are looking for jobs. So we're able to say like kind of definitively, like these are the trends. And so it's another really exciting thing we've been doing is putting out these quarterly reports that are like speaking to what the trends are, which are really helpful for people who are hiring early talent, really interesting to the media. And so we're really picking up steam on that work as well. I'm excited about it.
Very cool. I love it. I think that's, I think the mobile, but also data, the data stuff is really interesting because we're struggling with the same thing. We have a lot of data and how to write more about it. So it's a really interesting marketing challenge that I think I'm facing as well at the moment.
Yeah. What are you guys doing? Do you mind me asking?
Sure. I mean, we have a lot of data and like kind of understanding how do people convert from one channel to another, you know, like web to app conversion, what are like the overall percentages and how are they split by country, by vertical? But there's a lot of like cleanup you have to do, like where does an app sit and what type of vertical, you know, if there's a really big app, when you pull everything together, you need to make sure that the data is normalized. So it's just, it's an interesting challenge. But people are always wondering,
right,
how does my referral performance compare to others? How does my ad performance? And it has to be by vertical because, you know, like it is very different depending on the vertical, like click to install, click to open, click to purchase in an app ratios.
And so you feel like, I mean, I think the thing that it's like, there was this moment in marketing when everyone was like, hey, content's really important. And now it's like, it is, it's just a truism that like you have both the business that you're doing in terms of what you're selling. And then you also have this sort of like second conversation that's going on around like, oh, well, actually we're kind of uniquely situated better than any other player to also be experts on this thing. And so that ability to have like your dual track of like the content that comes out, that's like, you know.
Yeah. Like, you know, during COVID, we would show, oh, look at like how apps are seeing like by vertical. This is what verticals are seeing like in travel. There was like, so we published these charts and they did it like extremely well. So, and it's not like directly related to what we do, but we have this insight and we can be those experts. So I think it probably makes a lot of sense for you as well.
Yeah. It's something you can't ignore because it will... It just accrues overall. It's a long game, but it accrues overall to your brand in a way that you can't really replicate.
That you can't really, it's hard to measure.
Yes.
But it does really help.
Which is really a difficult position to be in as a marketer, because you're all, trust me, we need to do this. And it's like, but why? And you're all, just.
Well, if you do multi-touch and you do it well, you can actually see, hey, they opened this newsletter or they opened the thing and then they purchased a year later. So you can give a little bit of credit to the thing because... You know, that's what we do. So I think there's a way, but it's not like the simplest, right?
Yeah.
And it takes a long time.
Lagging.
It's very lagging. So it takes a long time to be like, oh, that report actually did so well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what's really interesting, we started talking a little bit about this at the beginning, is your background and how you got into marketing. I think you have an extremely cool background. I loved like reading about your web series, for example. So tell us maybe more about your background first, and then let's go into how, why you made the transition to marketing, how, and maybe your journey to getting to Handshake.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, my background is very varied.
But cool.
Yeah. Thank you. That's very validating. I did a bunch of odd jobs that aren't super interesting or important, but probably that journey kicked off when I went to I did my master's in the UK in design history in 2004. And honestly, what motivated me to even do that is I don't even know. I tend to kind of go with my gut. And I was like, this seems really interesting. I really want to do this. And then it was after I came out of that program at the Royal College of Art, that was sort of a feeder in. When you do design history, it's a real feeder into like one stream is higher ed. One stream is being a curator. And one stream, you know, being like a critic. After that, I really loved the writing and research element. So I went and did a PhD, did that at University of Texas. I was in an American Studies department, but I was studying under a design historian. And it very clear to me, like halfway through, that it was not going to be something that being an academic wasn't going to work for me. And so for many reasons, one being the pace, the other being like higher ed is it's its own world. And I knew, you know, once you're at a doctoral level, you're teaching assistant and you're working very closely with faculty. And so you really do have insights like what the world will be. Also, that was the beginning of the recession. And there was a glut of PhDs at the time, and there were not enough faculty jobs for us all. Anyway, so I didn't want to go move to the sticks. Like that's basically what happens when you're an academic. You have to like go off and do a postdoc somewhere really terrible and leave everything. You're not the driver of your own life. Basically, you can't really have a lot of agency. So that discipline lends itself very well to trades. So I've worked at museums. I worked at a museum between my two degrees. And then afterwards I worked at an archive, and I saw while I was working at this archive and I was finishing my PhD that that ESPN was going to start a university network, and signed a contract with the University of Texas and put out a press release. And it was like in our local paper. And I saw that in that press release, they said that 10% of the content, 24-hour network, had to be academic or cultural. And I thought, well, no one's going to do that. This is ESPN. They do sports programming. Like who do they have who's going to do like campus and academic content? That doesn't make any sense. I didn't have any experience doing TV at the time, but I just went and found them and I applied and I did it for free for a couple weeks. And then I did it hourly. And then I was hired to do it full time. And then I did that coming out of my PhD and did it for 3 years. It was pretty great. So that's a winding history, but there you go.
But tell us about your web series.
Oh, my web series. So, you know, at various given points, I think I don't know if you feel this too, but like when you work for other people, you are not in control of how you spend your day and what you spend your time on and all the decisions that, you know, especially earlier in my career when I had less autonomy over my own. Now I'm kind of in a different position, but at the time I think it just was like a way for me to get a lot of ideas out while I was working in TV, and I was very constrained. I was both constrained by the university. When I worked at ESPN, it was a university network. So I worked very closely with the folks in the university side. So I was constrained both by like it being university appropriate programming and it was ESPN, and that was a great place to learn. But then I also was like, well, I have a bunch of funny things I want to say. And so my best friend and I, that tends to be a real motivator for me, is like, well, I don't want anyone to tell me what to do. So we did this incredibly stupid web series, but then it like got kind of popular. And it was a time in the internet when it was just post internet being like fully, fully terrible, where like, you know what I mean? Like it was like, we had no trolls. We were on the Hairpin. We were on Jezebel. It was like a very sweet, cool time.
Did that have anything to do with you eventually, you know, thinking about like going to marketing? What made you kind of decide to become a marketer?
Honestly, I really was kicking and screaming into marketing. I didn't think I did it. Like I got that my next job in 2014 as a content strategist, and I only got it because at the ESPN job, there was so much liaising with the university that it was almost like an extension of the university media team. And so it was like, I was kind of doing university marketing, even though that was not my title. And so when this ed tech company, a girlfriend of mine was being recruited, and she's like, I don't want to do this, but do you want to do this? Like, you should talk to them. And I was like, well, I don't know what this is. I don't really understand what tech, what SaaS is and what tech is. And I don't really know. These people seem kind of goofy, but like, all right, I'll try it and I'll be a writer. And the CEO was like, okay, so this is marketing. You're doing marketing. I was like, I don't do marketing. I don't know. I don't know really what that is. And like, B, I don't do that. And we spent about a year arguing and I was like, I am a writer. And it was like, then eventually, like I was totally wrong. I like was doing marketing and it was great. It was fun.
Oh my God, that's awesome. So like, I think you had some interesting turns in your career and you're quite successful. But I know you've mentioned you have some inspirational women leaders that made a big impact in your life. Any words of wisdom from them to you? And also like, if you have words of wisdom for other women who are trying to get into tech.
Yeah, I have been very lucky. My favorite leaders have been women and my favorite peers. So there's sort of like two categories. One is I've been very lucky to at like every job I've had to have like a woman who I'm very close to, either as a leader or just as like as a kind of a peer mentor that kind of keep me sane. And I think that is probably true for a lot of women in the workplace. But I have had a lot of my best bosses were female. And some of the advice I've gotten from them at ESPN, I worked for the head of the network, was the former head of, she was awesome. She used to produce all NFL content. She was a very quiet woman. I know. And that just, I was always like, huh, this is a real male vibe. Here, like a lot of dudes, you know, and I was always very impressed that she had that job and she really was a fantastic leader, but very, very quiet, subtle leader. And she ended up, one of the things she told me that really stuck with me and is something I think about a lot now is a good leader makes himself totally dispensable. So she ended up kind of being pulled. She was really quite accomplished and was pulled up into an even more senior position within ESPN, like the mothership. And she, when she left, I was, oh my God, you're leaving us. How's this going to work? She goes, no. I would have not done my job if I couldn't leave within like a week. I have trained the people below me to be so good at what they're doing. I've kept them in the loop. And like, if they weren't, like that would be on me. And I just remember thinking like, that is a really, just remember that. I do that today. Like, I don't want to be indispensable. I want the people who work for me to be like, I want to encourage a lot of transparency. I want them to be included. I want them to feel so, I want them to be working like above their level so that if I get another job or have to do something else, and at Handshake, I have had to pivot quite a bit and change kind of my scope and my role, I can just say, you're ready. You're smart and you're ready. And you can totally do this. And that was like a great lesson.
Well, this was so cool. I feel like we got to know you better, got to know Handshake better. And usually we end with three fun but weird questions. So let's go into them. If you had to delete all the apps and you could only keep one app on your phone, what would you keep?
I knew you were going to ask this. And I was like, so the nice thing to say would be like WhatsApp, because I do have like a great chat going with my best friends and I would never want to lose that. But it's actually like TikTok or the Target app, probably. I mean, you know, like what am I really, what's indispensable? Target has made my life noticeably easier as a working mother. So probably the Target app.
Nice. I love it. Wow. That's amazing. I have a friend that works at Target. I'm going to send him. I'm going to tell him to listen to this episode for a bonus at the end.
It's a great app. I do it all.
It's a good app. I use it to order shit all the time. If you had an app to talk to one animal and one animal alone, what would it be?
I have a very annoying terrier named Jeff, and I would talk to Jeff. I kind of know what Jeff is saying now, but I'd want to like be sure. Like, I see you, dude. Probably him.
I also have a terrier, but she's scared of the world.
Oh,
but
That's okay.
I would want to hear her and calm her down. Yeah, so
that's nice.
And then what's an unlikely app on your phone?
Oh, you know what a great app that's an unlikely app on my phone is?
Tell me.
Beautypedia. I'm a real makeup, like obsessed. I love makeup videos. I love makeup. And Beautypedia is the app. Let's leave aside the like UI or like the function of the app, but the thing that's in it is like expert reviews based on ingredients of products. And it's a lot. It's like an encyclopedia of products. So if you're like at Sephora and you're all, do I want to use like which moisturizer? And you go in and you're like, okay, well, this is like, it's actually very cool and useful. I recommend it.
Okay. I'm downloading it. Mm-hmm. You've convinced me. Yeah. You've sold me on it.
Good.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. I feel I learned a lot. It was also awesome to hear your stories and really loved having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to this and share with someone trying to grow their career. Until next time, keep growing.